Last week's FBI sting operation over an alleged bomb plot to blow up the Federal Reserve Bank by a 21-year-old Bangladeshi student, Qazi Nafis, has brought up questions over FBI entrapment. In a case pending in New York's criminal court involving a bomb plot against synagogues, defense lawyers are arguing an undercover detective in the NYPD's Joint Terrorism Task Force engaged in entrapment. WBAI's Rebecca Miles has more on this story.
Today was the latest hearing in a case in New York's criminal court involving two men who were caught on a wiretap conspiring to bomb synagogues and buy weapons from undercover officers. Ahmed Farani, a 27-year-old Algerian native who lives in Queens with a long history of mental illness, and Mohamed Mamdo, a 20-year-old naturalized citizen, Moroccan native who also lived in Queens, were arrested in May 2011. Both had been monitored by undercover NYPD officers. However, investigators say the men were not linked to any terror groups, and both men pleaded not guilty. Farani had met an undercover detective at his home several times, discussed a plan to blow up a synagogue without being caught, had discussed bomb-making and selling drugs to fund weapon buys. A grand jury in the case declined to indict on the two most serious charges of high-level terror conspiracy count, but they were indicted on lesser state terror and hate crime charges. If the case goes to trial and they're convicted, they could face 32 years behind bars. Prosecutors in court today accused the defense of conducting a fishing expedition, delay tactics because they're not ready to go to trial, and they said they're ready to resolve this as soon as possible with a plea deal. Farani's lawyer, Lomis Deek, spoke to reporters outside criminal court and said they've been fighting for discoverable material for over a year and a half.
The reason that we've been forced into this quote-unquote fishing expedition, and the information, in fact, has been coming to us and we have not been seeking it, which speaks to the public's interest in this case because it affects everybody. The tactics and policies and practices of the NYPD are a threat to everybody's freedoms. And so we have a great number of people who are very interested in the outcome of this case and the way it's handled. And so any evidence that we have right now and any delay that's been caused by any discoveries that we've managed to make is a direct result of the district attorney's collusion in suppressing and continuing to perpetuate the district attorney's policies of, you know, concocting, manufacturing, and empowering rogue officers who were distrusted by the JTTF to continue this pattern of activity. The district attorney's office, in their own letter, stated that the JTTF did not find UC 242 credible and was concerned by the fact that he had been, since at least 2009, initiating criminal conversations.
The JTFF is the Joint Terrorism Task Force, and UC 242 is Undercover Detective 242. The investigation has been handled by the New York City Police Department and Manhattan District Attorney's Office. Federal law enforcement, which would normally be involved in a terror case, has declined to get involved. The defense attorneys are seeking disclosure documents to make the case of entrapment, but so far these have not been forthcoming.
In this case, from day one, we knew that our defense was primarily going to be the defense of entrapment, based on our conversations with the defendant, based on our conversations with witnesses. It was very clear, and even based on the grand jury's refusal to indict on the top count of arson as a crime of terrorism, it was very clear that entrapment was our defense. Part of the elements of that defense are, number one, that the government agent induced the defendant into committing the crime, and that the government agent behaved inappropriately in continuing that inducement. But for this inducement and manipulation, the defendant would not have committed the crime. Now, this goes, the idea of inducement and initiation is what we were discussing here today, and that's why it's discoverable material.
In a separate interview last week with Deek about entrapment cases, she explained how proving entrapment is so difficult in the 21st century because of limits placed on the courts on discoverable material.
The courts have not been willing to force the government to disclose all of their tactics in these cases. Across the board, we're finding that the prosecutors, the Department of Justice, the FBI, law enforcement, state law enforcement agencies are really protected by the courts from disclosing everything that's gone into the investigation. They don't tell us how these people come to be targeted, right? They don't tell us what are the directives that are given to these undercovers and to these informants before they find the defendant, the person that becomes a defendant. All of that goes into the inducement. All of that, I think, speaks to the motives of the government, but we're not given that information anymore. Our ability to compel discovery in these cases has been grossly limited, I think by political pressure, also by, the broader powers given to the prosecution, not just the law enforcement over the past 10, 11 years, and the fact that the prosecutors are able to deny the defendants and counsel that information by claiming national security, that this information, the tactics, the training, all of this is privileged by national security needs.
The difficulties Deke describes also faces lawyers in the Bradley Manning trial and lawyers working on Guantanamo cases. Deke said the reason lawyers were able to show entrapment in so many cases from the 60s and 70s, like in the Panthers 21 case and Camden 28, they were able to get evidence from the government about what the government did in setting these cases up. Now you can't do that, she says, and it's outrageous, and it's frustrating, and it's Kafkaesque. For WBAI's Evening News, I'm Rebecca Miles reporting.